Hello, and welcome to Catholic Schools New South Wales Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Jenny Cohen. Coronavirus has affected our lives in many ways. The way our kids learn, our jobs, our relationships, and our mental health and wellbeing. Today I'm talking to leading psychologist Andrew Fuller. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the work that you do as a psychologist?
Yeah, Jenny, I started out my career in psychiatric crisis teams. So I'd sort of be on bridges and in sieges with people who are in pretty bleak circumstances. And I was very fortunate nobody actually ever did any major harm to themselves. But it really got me thinking about how you stop people getting to that point in their lives. And that then led me to start to research, and this is hard to imagine now, what was then an unknown quantity of resilience. So in those days, well, I'd talk about resilience, and people talk about steel and tension. So they hadn't really applied it to human behaviours. It's now such a common term, of course, that I'm delighted, but it's hard to imagine those earlier times. And so now we think very much in terms of that. So it's really been about thinking about how do I work with people to co-create with them futures they can fall in love with. That's the purpose of my job.
Okay, thank you. In a recent article you wrote, you made the comment that some young people have been living an online lifestyle for years, and that means those kids are thriving. And I think there's lots of parents and teachers out there that would absolutely agree with that comment. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the kids that maybe aren't so used to being online, aren't used to being socially isolated, and really need that face-to-face contact. What might be some of the issues that they might be facing at this time?
Well, we know that our sense of belonging in our lives is one of the most powerful antidotes to suicide, to violence, and to ongoing drug abuse. And so in times of disconnection, we need to work much harder to build that sense of belonging. And so it's important on organisations, but also on schools, to basically reach out and connect to their communities in more powerful and more personal ways, I think, than perhaps ever before. So even the distance of screens, we need to try and overcome that to some extent by at least linking with people one-on-one at times, and freeing teachers and parents up, obviously, to do that as well, having some one-on-one time with their kids.
Yeah, okay, so relationships are just as important as the three R's, really.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in fact, they go hand in hand. It's not that there's one or the other. It's basically you can't basically learn well if you don't feel good about yourself, basically. And so we know that essentially they're intertwined. And a good learner is a pretty happy kind of person who's feeling comfortable about having a go at things. And so mental well-being and learning are absolutely the same thing. In fact, having done quite a lot of research in this area and studied 197,000 young Australians, I can really confidently conclude that one of the most powerful ways to help young people feel successful and to feel that they have mental well-being is to help them learn that they're smart and how to get smarter. And so it's not necessarily more and more mental health initiatives, although we still need some of those, but we also need to make sure that we more powerfully give our young people a message they can succeed.
And do you think some of that involves teaching them more social and emotional skills and maybe problem solving skills?
Yeah, some of the things that I think are really exciting is about talking about how do you plan to create a better future for the world and for yourself. It's about how do you then take the steps in order to get to there. It's about creative thinking. It's about critical thinking in terms of critiquing some of the rubbish that's out there. And there's plenty of that to kind of wade our ways through. And also it's then thinking about who are you as a person and who do you want to become. So often in our world, we are so busy and so rushed, we don't often pause to really think about who we might decide that we want to be. And a lot of young people that I work with feel that their identity has really been pressed upon them rather than created by them. And that's a big change to make for them, if we can start to talk about how to envisage a different kind of life for themselves.
And I think a lot of young people at the moment would feel that maybe the world or the state the world is in and the lives that some adults have created for them is probably not the way that they would like to see things go when they themselves are adults.
That's right. And so that will range quite substantially between some people who are going, ha, 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 you boomers have basically got what you deserve, really, in terms of you've not looked after the environment, so what do you expect? So there's certainly an element of that as well. But there's also a group of people who are enormously anxious about this, and it becomes a little bit like, I'm probably showing my age here, but it actually reminds me a little bit of the Minutes to Midnight type of scenario where how long is it before we start to really disintegrate as a society? And so there's also all sorts of anxieties that are happening. So in terms of my clinical work, some of the things that we're seeing is an increase in sort of the generalized anxieties, absolutely. What I'm not seeing so far, and we may see it, but I'm getting a little bit of it, but not very much, is the sort of increased family conflict and perhaps family violence that we feared we were going to get. So that's good at the moment, but the anxiety is certainly very prevalent. And the sense of loneliness for some kids, particularly those who are on the periphery, is important to kind of think about as well.
And I'd like to talk to you about both those things, if I can, both anxiety and the opportunities that COVID-19 actually brings for not only young people, but for all of us to have a look at the situation the world is in and be more innovative and creative in what we do. But if we can look at anxiety first, you and I as mental health professionals know that the research tells us that 1 in 7 young people school-aged in Australia has a mental health issue, and probably the most common is anxiety. What are some common worries a young person might face during COVID-19?
So people express their anxiety in a number of ways. So there's three levels of anxiety. The first one is freeze, where people almost become paralyzed in the face of threat or fear. And they will present as quite listless, disengaged, avoidant, and despondent in many cases. So it can look a little bit like depression, but it's actually anxiety that's driving it. And it's that sort of sense of really having no agency or empowerment to overcome it. And so the thing that we need to help those young people do is to switch them out of that level of a freeze response. And fortunately, that's partly through slow out breathing, but also doing minor physical activities makes a gigantic difference to that. Then the second level is fight and flight, which I guess is the most popular, if you like, form of anxiety that we all talk about. And that's where you want to fight people or run away from them. And so your body is basically built up for energy and agitation and restlessness and so on. And at that point, it's not so much about talking it through. It's about getting rid of the buildup of excess stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline most particularly. So that's the time for cycling it out, running it out, singing it out, dancing it out, moving it out. So basically we need to get rid of our excess stress hormones in order to think more clearly. And the third level, which is sometimes called tend, mend and befriend, but I prefer the title connect, protect and respect, is when we do things in sync with other people. So, and I know that's hard to do right at the moment, but there are some possibilities of doing it. So we know that when we link ourselves and sync ourselves with other people, and that can be as simple as having a really good conversation, and you're nodding your head and I'm nodding my head, or we're throwing a ball to one another, or a frisbee, or we're dancing together, or we're doing something in accord with one another, that we calm people. And so that's why good relationships are calming things, really, ultimately, not all the time, but mostly, and bad relationships are anxiety provoking. And so that's why we seek out sort of good friendship as an important way of dealing with some of our issues. Talking it over with a friend is a time-honored way of dealing with anxiety. So we have to then think about those three different levels and what might be presenting. Freeze, for those that are basically almost stuck. Fight and flight, for those that are so agitated. And then this higher level where if we've dealt with those other two, we can get to the point where it's connect, protect and respect. We can link and talk our way through. But often in schools particularly, we often are people of the word. And so we think the talking it through should be our first response, whereas in reality, it may not be the thing that's effective most often. That may be more important to slow yourself down, breathe more slowly, get rid of the buildup of stress hormones, and then we talk.
How would a parent know whether someone was actually clinically anxious or whether their worries that they had were just common to many kids their own age? What sort of signs might we see in a young person that you think might need assistance in terms of how worried they actually are?
Sure, Jenny. So the three rules of thumb that I always use, the first one is this young person substantially different from how they normally are? You know, so basically a kid who's normally running around full of beans who's suddenly flat out on the couch is pretty concerning. Or a kid who's usually pretty listless, basically on the couch and hasn't moved much, is probably less of a concern. The second one is, does that change exhibit itself across different contexts? So ignoring COVID for the moment and saying, well, you know, a kid who basically is morose at home and cranky and grumpy, but cheers up as soon as he or she is with her mates at school, is less of a concern than one who carries that morose, sullen attitude right throughout the day. And the third one, I think, is that basically parents are well tuned to their kids. They know their kids better than anyone else ever will. And so the third rule of thumb is, how worried is the parent? Now, it doesn't mean that we're always right in terms of our fears, because we can project our fears onto kids at all times, but it's always worth, if you're really feeling that you're concerned on somebody's behalf, I always recommend that people ask about it. It's best to bring it up and start to talk about it and say, hey, you know, I was just thinking about you the other day and I was worrying about you and I just wanted to talk about whether you think I have anything that I should be worried about. Yeah, be proactive, reach out to people. I find kids, you know, sometimes kids will, I'll say that to young people, even the ones that have been referred for therapy, they go, no, there's nothing to worry about. You know, mum and dad are fearing nothing, it's crazy. And they can reassure me that, you know, things are okay. Other kids basically, maybe there are a few things I should be worrying about. And I find young people are quite honest about that when you talk about it that way. They respond to the caring that you relate to them.
Okay. And that links into what you were talking about before about relationships, doesn't it, and the quality of the relationships that you have.
Yeah, so we often think about mental health as an individual business, and we often talk about mental illness as individually as well. So this is a person with ADHD. This is somebody who's got depression. This is somebody who's got anxiety. But if I think about all of the people that I've seen over many, many years, really the way that we get healing happening is through relationships. So when you're engaged with people who treat you well, when you're engaged in people who care and listen and try to help you through things, it goes a long, long way to really starting to sort things out. So I think that part of the anxiety for lots and lots of people is, am I worthwhile? And is my contribution going to be valued in the world? And having somebody in your life who does think you're great and does think you're okay, but also says you have something to offer, and that is something that the world will also value ultimately. They may not see it right now, and that's a shame, but they will eventually learn what your value is, and you will as well. Helps you then to formulate a sense of kind of hope for the future.
Okay, and I think hope for the future really is just such a vital thing all the time, but particularly for young people now, where we are seeing young people getting quite concerned about the state of the world, particularly when you turn on the news and a lot of the stories we hear are pretty, you know, bad stories across the globe, not only about COVID-19, but about other things that are happening and people rioting and things like this. Sometimes I think it's easy to forget about the positive things and the strengths that you're talking about.
It's interesting to think about, if you were to time travel into the future and look back on this and say, well, how would you talk about it? Would you talk about it as a time of major dislocation and disruption? Or would you talk about it as a time when you had the wherewithal to kind of reconsider your life and maybe reinvent different aspects of it? I think it's an interesting way to take ourselves out of the immediacy of the kind of drama. And also, I think it's important to basically limit the amount of media that you take in too. because there's so much conjecture and so many opinions and so much fake news that you can basically get deluged by it and unduly become unduly anxious.
Yeah, I really agree with that, even as an adult, let alone a young person. So I guess as we are all living up close and personal at home, parents, kids, dogs and cats, everyone together, we've talked a little bit about young people and maybe what they're anxious about. But I think there's probably lots of parents and teachers out there that are trying to help their kids learn online, maintain a safe household, do their own jobs without interruption. How do we as adults maintain our sanity and dignity?
We're also going to go through a number of different responses at different times to the sort of chaos and uncertainty of the world. We go through fear and bewilderment, and then we go through a kind of anger around that, and then we get to a stage that I've described, are we there yet? Come on, this should be over by now. And we get a bit frustrated, and we sort of cycle around through those. And so it's important to realise that any one time in a family, you're probably going to have kids or people who are in each of those stages. And so if you basically tie yourself in too closely into their dramas, you're going to be a mess. And so part of the art of this is to take your sails out of their winds a bit. Just because they're having a drama about something doesn't mean you having a drama with them is going to be beneficial. So this is a sort of the fine art of equanimity, I call it, where basically you're trying to almost think about going back to what helps you to basically survive through this. Now, I've talked about parents and what they can do, and I talked about it in terms of in a paper on the big three things that I think parents really can do long term that predict success for their kids. And it's not basically getting through the to-do list of the daily curriculum. While doing some of that is important, that's really the job of schools and teachers, and they will either succeed at that or struggle with it. We'll see how that goes. Really, the three big things that long-term predict how well a kid is going to do, the first one really is a sort of sense of possibility for themselves, their motivation around life. And so thinking about how do I help this young person to feel some sense of inspiration about some area of learning. And the second one really is about their own ability to regulate their emotions. So what emotional regulation means, and it's a pretty important skill, is when you're revved up and cranky and grumpy, how you calm yourself down, or when you're feeling a bit dejected or a bit kind of morose, how do you cheer yourself up? And one of the ways that we learn that is not by explicitly learning it, but we can do some of that through social emotional learning in schools. But the best way to learn it, of course, is having a parent who recognises in themselves when they are either up there and feeling agitated or down there and feeling avoidant, and bring themselves back to, if you like, that kind of zone of resilient mindset where they can cope quite well. And then teaching their kids how to do that as well. We all have moments when we're anxious. We all have moments when we're avoidant. But we want to spend most of our time in a sort of productive, positive mindset. And it's important that the parents show kids how to do that, not by necessarily teaching them, but by living it and living it well and basically taking care of themselves. The third area is academic self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is a fancy term for saying, do you think you can do it or not? And so we know that all the research tells us that a person who thinks that they can accomplish something is going to go a lot further than somebody who doesn't believe in themselves. And so helping young people to learn to believe in themselves, to know that they're smart and how to get smarter, makes a gigantic contribution to that. And to that end, I set up a website called mylearningstrengths.com that kids can go on to, or people can go on to of any age, and assess their own learning strengths. And they get a free letter from me that says, congratulations, Jenny, you're really good at this and this, but if you want to get a bit in another area, here's a way of doing it. And the reason that I did that was partly because I thought that very few young people get to hear from an adult who's neither their teacher nor a parent about something they're good at. And there's a full report you can get, but that basic letter is often a good starting point for conversations. even if the kid goes, gets this letter and goes, that's a load of rubbish, it enables a parent to go, well, okay, if that's rubbish, what do you think is true? And what areas do you think you actually show some learning strengths in? And so, because of course, if we can springboard from what kids are already good at, it makes motivation and self-efficacy much, much more likely.
It does. And look, that sounds wonderful. And I'll make sure that we put a link to that website at the bottom of this podcast. So, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a delight. Thank you, Jenny.